Hello and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly performing arts magazine. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week we'll hear from a couple of conductors, and both of them female. Dawn Harms is director of the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony. She'll be here with Natalie Parker to discuss this weekend's Bay Area Rainbow Symphony concert. Matilda Hoffman is conducting a new chamber opera by Kurt Rohde, courtesy of the New Century Chamber Ensemble. The Left Coast Chamber Ensemble, my bad there. We'll also hear from Peter Robinson at the end of the hour. He'll be giving us a little tribute to the St. Patrick's Day holiday. And KT Nelson and Brenda Way will talk about ODC dance at the Yerba Buena Center. Stay with us. That's original music by Zoe Keating, which will be performed as part of ODC's reprise of Boulders and Bones. Dance fans are in for a treat. If you didn't catch it last year, you have a chance to catch it once again this weekend at Yerba Buena Center, as ODC Dance presents not only Boulders and Bones this first weekend, it's a work that is inspired by visual artist Andy Goldsworthy, but also a second weekend of two world premieres. Here to talk about both Boulders and Bones and the second weekend of ODC Dance are founder and artistic director Brenda Way and co-artistic director KT Nelson. No strangers to Open Air. Welcome back to you both.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
So Zoe Keating's original music for Boulders and Bones being reprised as part of this coming weekend's work. What inspired you to bring this work back so quickly?
Well, actually, the audience response and interest seemed to warrant it. And also, I think for us, we always try to reprise a new work in the following year because it grows up. It gets richer, people see it in a different way, and our dancers embody it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. I also think from an internal view, we had a great time working on Boulders and Bones. It was a collaboration between Brenda and myself, RJ Muna, working with the visual artist Andy Goldsworthy, and I think a little bit our second weekend is carrying that forward. That collaborative.
So I'm sorry, I missed it last year. I'm hoping to catch it this
week. And that's why we're redoing it.
Well, there you go. So is it projection of Andy's works that are being presented as part of the dance, or how is Andy's visual aspect?
Well, actually, the piece opens with a 5-minute stop action film of his creating this work, which is a film by RJ Muna. So that it's book. So you get in the mind of his work and his perception, and the physical labor associated with building this work before you go into the dance. So it really frames, I think, the audience perception of what we do.
And
he's coming Saturday night.
Oh, fantastic!
And our approach to the work was to parallel his artistic process. It's something we share. What is the artistic process? So we used a quote of his that he sent to Brenda about his process, and we followed that. So literally, the 5-minute documentary of his 9-month process is an introduction, a prologue to the evening.
I should mention that we talked about this very work last year when it was premiered, so if folks want a more detailed discussion about Boulders and Bones, you can go to klw.org and just search for Boulders and Bones or ODC Dance, and I'm sure you can hear the full interview. Let's talk about the second weekend of works that are coming for ODC.
Well, on the second weekend, we'll be premiering The Invention of Wings, which, like Boulders and Bones, was inspired really by a visual artist, and in this case, Ai Weiwei, and the exhibit on Alcatraz, for which Cheryl Haynes commissioned an ODC event on opening night. And so we thought it would be interesting to see if we could transpose that piece that was very clearly cited in the prison to a theatrical space. The issues of censorship and repression and freedom of expression, of course, seem to be always in our lives, but they've been very, very, very much in the news lately with the situation in Paris and other places. I decided to have a gang, really very much the same group that did Boulders and Bones. That is, I collaborated with Katie and with R.J. Muna. And in this case, with Matthew Antaki for the stagecraft. Mm-hmm. But that piece is a full company piece, and it is it happens in the theater and outside of the theater.
Exploring the themes of censorship. I don't know if you've caught the exhibit on Alcatraz yet.
Yes. Well, we were there for the opening, and so I went back to see the thing, and to see his contribution to those things. You know, I would say the piece is not about an answer to these things, but really it is just an artist's response to the issues,
and to remind us that it happens regularly
still,
in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Katie Nelson with Brenda Way. We're talking about ODC Dance's 44th home season. The second weekend, which runs through the 22nd of March, includes two world premieres, one we just talked about, Invention of Wings, and then some more original music by Joan Jean Renaud coming.
Yes, she did the score for Dead Reckoning, which is my new work. I had a great time working with her, lots of exchange of ideas, working together closely, her coming into the studio. And the Dead Reckoning is really about people in an unpredictable landscape. And I read about Dead Reckoning from a wonderful philosopher, naturalist, Kathleen Moore. And it means when you, normally when you navigate, the most predictable way of navigating is with the stars. But when that reference point is gone, you use other reference points and your intuition, and there's a chance for a cumulative error. And I wonder sometimes whether we're living in a time of dead reckoning with the rate at which nature is changing.
Mm-hmm. And collaborating once again with Joan Jean Renaud.
Yes.
Fantastic. She will also be performing live, is that correct, or is it recorded?
No, actually, it's not. She's collaborated with a percussionist, a P.C. Munoz, and it's all pre-recorded.
You're also hosting a spring gala on Friday the 20th, which I'm sure you're looking forward to, raising some well-deserved and well-needed funds for ODC.
Yes. Always.
Always.
and there will be a very lively party afterwards.
Well, that's good to hear.
Which we're looking forward to.
The gala and dinner are on the 20th of March, next Friday, at the St. Regis. Information about ODC Dance 44th home season at odcdance.org. Brenda Way, Katie Nelson, thanks so much for coming in today. And let's go out with some music of Joan Jean Renaud that you can hear next weekend as part of the 44th home season at Yerba Buena Center. music of Joan Jean Renault, part of the ODC dance presentation of The Invention of Wings. That's to be performed next weekend at Yerba Buena Center, part of the 44th home season of ODC Dance Downtown. Before Brenda Way and KT Nelson left us in the studio the other day, they mentioned that by all means, if you come to the performances or to the gala at the St. Regis on the 20th, please say hello. They're always anxious and happy to meet the patrons of ODC. Good afternoon. David LaTulipe with you for Open Air. Still to come, Dawn Harms and Natalie Parker will be talking about the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony's concert this coming Saturday. Peter Robinson will be musing on the St. Patrick's Day holiday. And next, well, another association with ODC, but not presented by ODC. It'll be at ODC. The Left Coast Chamber Ensemble presents Death with Interruptions, a new chamber opera by Kurt Rohde. It's award-winning composer Kurt Rohde. This has been adapted from a novel by Jose Saramago by the distinguished UC Berkeley historian Thomas LaCour. The performances will be at the ODC Theater on 17th Street on the 19th and 21st. And here to talk about it is the conductor of that performance, Matilda Hoffman. Matilda has been a busy conductor in Europe as well as here in California and has conducted at the Salzburg Festival, the Holland Festival, at the Philharmonie in Berlin, and the Tonhalle in Zurich. She'll be working with the SWR Orchestra in April in California. She's the regular conductor of the Empyrean Ensemble and music director of the Diablo Symphony Orchestra. Welcome to Open Air, Matilda.
Thank you.
Well, this is quite an exciting thing, a chamber opera premiere. You've had an association with the music of Kurt Rohde for a little while, haven't you?
Yes, I have. A couple of years back, I premiered his concertino with Left Coast Chamber Ensemble and Axel Strauss's soloist, a wonderful, very different work from this opera today, and we recorded that too.
Right. Yeah. So we got to get this story out. Kurt Rohde was a guest on Sarah Cahill's program Revolutions Per Minute this past Sunday. In fact, if you want to hear that interview, you can still catch it at our website, klw.org, and hear some of Kurt's music there. But he told the fascinating story of this opera, Death with Interruption. Can you share with us the synopsis?
It's a fascinating and complex story. It starts with the backdrop of Death deciding that she's going to show to mankind what it's like not to die. And of course, this creates total chaos. She regrets her actions and then decides that instead she's going to try a new way of doing things. She's going to give people a letter a week before in order to give them a bit of time to wind up their personal business. This also starts to go wrong when one of the letters gets returned. So she takes it on as her personal mission to go and find this cellist whose letter did not arrive, the cellist in the local symphony orchestra.
Well, I could see one less violist, but one less cellist, I don't know about that.
Right, and it's the principal cellist of the orchestra. I'm a violist myself, I'll take viola jokes.
Keep that one in your head.
I'll keep that one, yes. it's a little bit the reverse of when you get in the Germanic languages, Der Tod, who is a male character often coming out to seduce a young consumptive girl. And in the Latin languages, it's a female death. So she starts to fall in love with this cellist, and it's about her transformation into a human. So it's the...
Well, it's sort of a reimagined version of the Orpheus myth then as well.
Absolutely, and you'll hear that a little bit at the end of the opera, and in fact it's a reversal of that process.
Well, can we hear a little bit of music from your... This is from your dress rehearsal last night. We'll just hear a brief excerpt, perhaps set this up for us, then we'll talk a little bit more.
Yes, so this is the moment where Death is still determined to make sure that this cellist is actually going to die and not overturn her usual way of doing things. But she's just gone on the cusp. So she's saying, look, I'm going to give you one last chance. Play your cello beautifully, and then I'm going to give you this letter.
Music of Kurt Rohde, and then more with Matilda Hoffman.
Thank you.
That's an excerpt from Kurt Rohde's new chamber opera, Death with Interruptions, based on the Nobel Prize winner José Saramago's novel, Death with Interruptions, which recounts the story of what happens when Death, who lives in an unnamed Iberian country, falls in love with the principal cellist of a local orchestra and fails to claim his life. That excerpt in rehearsal conducted by my guest Matilda Hoffmann. That's some challenging stuff, and it sounds so beautiful.
It's very beautiful music. It's a tremendous challenge and a wonderful one, putting a completely new opera together. Because there's some, what I find exciting is there are so many different people approaching the piece that's been written from different angles. Mm-hmm. And as we go through the rehearsal process, it gradually comes into focus. And that's really fascinating. And Kurt's music is, I find, so much music of our time. It can often be very intense and many-layered, frenetic even at times, but other times, like the one you just heard, very spacious and searching for some other way of being.
Kurt Rohde, the founding artistic director of the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble as well. Kurt couldn't be with us today because he's teaching up in Sacramento today, but as I mentioned, you can hear a full interview with him through this coming Sunday at our website, klw.org, if you check on the local music player. He was a guest on Revolutions Per Minute with Sarah Cahill this past Sunday evening. Matilda, tell us a little bit more about your cast of characters. Who is your Death?
Death is a wonderful local soprano, Nikki Einfeld. She sung with the San Francisco Symphony. She was a member of the Marola program here at the opera, and it's just a joy to work with her. And then we have two other characters. Daniel Chilli is the cellist, and his alter ego, as it were, the other cellist is actually in the orchestra, played by Leighton Fong of the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble. And then we have a third character, very interesting character, the tenor, who has three different roles. The scythe, Death's scythe, and in fact he's hopelessly in love with Death and feels jilted by the whole situation that's been going on, that he has to actually facilitate. And then at the end of the opera, he's also the cellist's dog, and also the narrator. But somehow at the very end, they all become three elements of the same person.
It all works out quite well. But, how many people are involved in the chamber ensemble version of this?
So the ensemble, there's a string quartet, which is right at the back, and then there's percussion, piano, the solo cellist, and then there's also Volti Chorus, who are doing a wonderful job.
And Volti, fantastic. Yeah. That's wonderful to capture them. What are we going to see on stage at ODC if we come to Death with Interruptions?
Well, Majel Connery, the stage director, has some fascinating ideas. The music, Death with Interruptions, and in that sense, it the music by its nature stops and starts and has very sudden changes in it, whereas I think probably on the stage, we're just about to come into this part of the rehearsal, but often something which is very slow-moving and beautiful, I'm expecting it to look very beautiful and have as it were, a slow focus which takes you from the beginning to the end.
That sounds like a fascinating evening of not only theater, but some exciting music by Kurt Rohde and visually at the ODC. What a terrific space for that. It's very intimate, and people can really enjoy it there.
Yes, be part of the audience can really be part of what's going on.
That's Matilda Hoffmann. She'll be conducting the premiere of Death with Interruptions, a new opera by Kurt Rohde, next weekend, Thursday and Saturday at ODC, 17th Street here in San Francisco. Information at leftcoastensemble.org for those performances. I'd like to thank you, Matilda, for coming in, but there's also another piece of music in addition to Kurt's music that's going to be featured opening up this opera.
That's right. At the very beginning of the show, they're going to be playing an excerpt from Schubert's Death and the Maiden string quartet. And in fact, there's just a trace of that music that can be heard at the beginning of Kurt's opera. So that will be a very nice transition.
Let's hear a little bit of that now as we transition here on Open Air. Still to come, Dawn Harms and Natalie Parker will be talking about Bay Area Rainbow Symphony. And we'll hear from Peter Robinson musing on the St. Patrick's Day holiday. Matilda, I wish you toy, toy, toy for the performances of Death with Interruptions by Kurt Rohde.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming in. Music of Schubert now. Music from the Schubert Quartet, Death and the Maiden, the Andante Movement excerpt, will be featured as part of Death with Interruptions, a new opera by Kurt Rohde, next weekend at ODC, the 19th, a Thursday evening, and Saturday evening. Information at leftcoastensemble.org. Good afternoon, David LaTulipe here with you for Open Air, our weekly performing arts magazine. Now joined by Dawn Harms, who is the music director of the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony. Dawn is also a member of the San Francisco Opera Orchestra and associate concertmaster for the New Century Chamber Orchestra. She's also been involved with the Aspen Music Festival and is on the faculty of Stanford University. We're very pleased to have her, and I must give full disclosure here, I'm a proud member of the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony. And Dawn, thank you for leading us. You're doing a stellar job.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, you pay me well. Thank you.
Well, let's not go there. I have three orchestras that I play and none of which pay. You know, so, well, what do you do? Natalie Parker is recently named the principal clarinetist of the San Francisco Opera Orchestra.
Ballet
Orchestra. Well, welcome and congratulations on that.
Thank
since 2012.
You.
Thank that must have been much. Quite a process auditioning for that.
Yes, actually. Well, I got very lucky, and that was the first audition I ever took. I was in grad school at the time, and
I'm sorry, we got to stop this interview now.
Wunderkind.
Like I said, I got lucky.
Good for you. Well, you are performing as part of this Bay Area Rainbow Symphony concert, performing the Weber Concertino. Yes.
Yes.
And have you performed this before with a full orchestra?
Never with a full orchestra. I played this piece probably at least 10 years ago in high school, the first concerto. It's a wonderful piece, but Weber is kind of something you start learning in high school, and then you can pick up later
it's
on.
It's one of those rock-solid horses of
exactly.
the repertoire.
It's like the daily bread, yes.
Well, Dawn, you've spent a lot of time working with us on the beginning of this Weber concerto, because it's very stormy to start off with, and there's quite an introduction before we hear the clarinet come in. Tell us about this, the beginning of this Weber piece.
Well, you know, you think clarinet, and a lot of people say, oh, I played the clarinet in high school, I played the clarinet in maybe junior high, because there's a lot of clarinets in the world because there's a lot of bands. And in a symphony orchestra, there's maybe two or three. So Natalie is, like, so special because it's very rare to get these positions, which she has in the ballet. So the beginning of this Weber is so stormy, and it's technical at the same time. And that's what I wanted to say, because she has to work so hard on this, and is not a high school piece at all. She said, oh, we start in high school. But that's because there's so much to it. Mm-hmm. The opening, I think, sets the stage. And I was telling the orchestra, it's like an opera without the scenes, the sets, the costumes. We have to set up this incredible scene before she even starts playing. So it's very Sturm und Drang, very stormy with the dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. It's so exciting. And then there's a huge chord. The whole orchestra comes in. And then she starts playing. So it takes us on this journey up and down on the emotional realm.
Well, let's have a little bit of a listen of the Weber Clarinet Concerto No. 1, and then we'll talk more with Dawn Harms and Natalie Parker. We'll have some Weber for you a minute. We're trying to cue that up properly. Give us one moment here. We'll have to get back to that excerpt in just a moment. We've got a problem, technical problem with our computer here. Dawn, we will hear a little bit of that storm. We could all just sing it together.
Yum, bum, 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 bum.
And it's still Beiger in my headphones here.
I don't know what Beiger's been playing.
Okay, well, we'll work out the excerpt in a moment.
Well, if you think about Weber met Beiger, they might be really good friends and have a collectively incredible piece. I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
We could play them simultaneously.
Well, we'll come back to Weber when we can work that out. But also on the program, we're doing, I believe it's a premiere of a piece for full orchestra by
Marco,
Croatian-American composer, out of Minnesota, no less, but now living here in San Francisco. Talk to us about Marco.
Well, Bars tries to do, not that it's so unique, but we try to do a modern composer and with a 19th century or 18th century composer. And the neat thing is that he is a local composer, went to San Francisco Conservatory, and he wrote this piece for wind ensemble several years ago, and he wanted to perform it with us. And I said, well, of course, we're a full orchestra, so could you make it into a full orchestra? So he added strings, and I love winds, don't get me wrong, but it's wonderful to have the string depth and sonority with the winds together. So it is the premiere of the orchestral version of it, and it's beautiful. Like I said, it's about 10 minutes long, and it starts off
with this haunting thirds and major minor seconds with the winds, and then the strings come in 10 bars later and just carry it to this incredible rhythmic section that drives almost like a Morse code.
Morse code,
that's
yes.
That's it. Da, da, da.
Yeah,
you got it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to hear the wind ensemble version of it because we don't even have a
right.
full orchestra
it
version.
It will be
of
the
it.
Premiere.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit of the music of Marco Beiger and then more with Dawn Harms and Natalie Parker. Music of Marco Beiger, his Codex, which you can hear the orchestral premiere this coming Saturday as part of the Bay Area Rainbow Symphonies concert. That concert will be at Everett Middle School on 450 Church Street between 16th and 17th Street. The 8 p.m. concert, more information at bars-sf.org. Conductor Dawn Harms is shepherding that orchestral version into its birth this coming Saturday. What did you discover working with Marco on this piece, Dawn?
Well, I discovered what Codex means, and it means an old book, for those of you who don't know. And it is. He said he wanted us to, he didn't really have a theme in mind or a story. He wanted us to unfold the story, open the book, and make our own journey. So I love, there's a lot of, a little klezmer spot where the two violas have a solo. Goes to a little more, I don't know, Middle Eastern, ethnic, just a really wonderful journey where your mind can just open its imagination. And he just let us kind of do what we wanted, our interpretation, so that was nice. He told us wrong notes and certain things like that. But other than that, it was quite fun to see it go from the first reading to what it is now.
Mm-hmm. It's quite an exciting piece, and I'm looking forward to playing it myself. It's a nice piccolo writing as well for it.
Yeah.
These wonderful breezes you can almost hear.
Very beautiful, very tangible for everyone, I think.
Well, back here with Natalie Parker, who is soloing with the Bars Symphony this coming Saturday with the Clarinet Concerto No. 1 of Weber, we did manage to find an excerpt. I'm wondering if you would like to hear some of the second or third movement.
Sure.
Well,
how about third?
Let's do the third.
A little bit of third. Yeah. Here's a touch of the third movement of the Weber Clarinet Concerto, which will be performed this Saturday by Natalie Parker. Music from the Weber Clarinet Concerto No. 1. That performance is on a YouTube excerpt. Sabine Grofmeyer was performing. We'll hear Natalie Parker perform it this coming Saturday as part of the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony Concert Saturday evening at Everett Middle School. That not only sounds technically challenging, but it sounds like a lot of fun to play.
It is. It is. Especially that movement. It's so happy. And it just trips along. It's very different from the first movement, which is very Sturm und Drang, very dramatic, very operatic. The third movement is just like a breezy walk in the park.
And sandwiched in between is some of the most gorgeous lyrical writing for clarinet on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Really
that
nice.
Middle movement is stunning.
Mm. Well, I wish you a wonderful performance on Saturday.
Thank you very much.
Well, the neat thing about it is that I think it might be the first time people will have heard it. I mean, not that Webern is not played a lot, but I think at least for our audiences, it will be neat because I think people won't have heard it. So that's the interesting thing.
Yes,
be new to them.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I hope so.
I don't want to say the main part of the concert, but a juicy part of this concert on Saturday is the rather formidable Third Symphony of Johannes Brahms.
Yes.
Tell us about that work and how you are related to it, how it relates to you.
Well, you know, Brahms has always been a favorite of mine, and he loved this symphony the most. He wrote four symphonies, but he says this is his most profound and deep symphony of the four. And he was in his happiest time in his life because he threw a lot of works away. He was disappointed with most of them. He hated his work, and he was always in such distress and unhappiness. And he wrote this in Wiesbaden in Germany. And he wrote it in a cottage trying to emulate Wagner. He said, I feel like Wagner. I can just write and write and write. And he was so happy. And you notice it in all the movements except the gorgeous third movement. It's very, very heart-wrenching. And I think he came back to his love maybe for Clara Schumann and that and then wrote again for her and that. But it's just breathtaking, the third movement.
Let's just hear a beginning of the first movement to set the mood for this incredible symphony.
Thank you.
The opening movement of the Brahms Symphony No. 3 to be performed by the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony this coming Saturday night under the baton of Dawn Harms. It goes through so much, and each of those movements is so different. It's really amazing. One of the things that I love about this movement is, as you do, is the third movement, which my teacher, Bernard Goldberg, was with the Pittsburgh Symphony for years. He used to say that, I think it was Bruno Walter that called this phenomena of oozing forward, a Brahms bellyache.
Well, bellyache in love, bellyache.
Bellyache in love. Yeah. Well, let's hear a little bit of the third movement of Johannes Brahms' symphony. Not before I thank Dawn Harms for coming in this week.
Thank you.
Along with Natalie Parker, I wish us all a wonderful performance on Saturday night. During this Brahms' third movement, we do have some tickets to give away to this Saturday's performance. We have 5 pair of complimentary tickets for this concert at Everett Middle School this Saturday. Everett Middle School is on Church Street between 16th and 17th Street. Give us a call now, 841-4134. Or remember, you have to do an area code now, 1415-841-4134, as we listen to the music of Johannes Brahms. Very confusing bit of Brahms is thanks to some technical difficulties we're having at KALW here. Stand by. If you're on the phones, we'll have someone answer. The phone lines are full, so it looks like those 5 pair of tickets are getting over with here at Open Air for Saturday's performance of the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony. I'm David LaTulipe. This is Open Air here on local public radio KALW San Francisco. You can hear a less confusing version of the Brahms Symphony this Saturday at 8 o'clock at the Everett Middle School. Everett Middle School is located on Church Street between 16th and 17th Streets here in San Francisco. Dawn Harms conducting, Marco Beiser's Codex, a new work having its orchestral premiere, and new clarinetist with the San Francisco Opera Orchestra, Natalie Parker, featured for Weber's Clarinet Concerto. Well, it's rapidly approaching St. Patrick's Day, and our regular contributor Peter Robinson is here, not only with a musing on St. Patrick's Day, but with a review of a work that was performed last week, word for word. I had the folks that were involved with the Alice Munro pieces here on last week's Open Air. What did you think of them?
Well, I think this is a great show. And just for listeners who may not be familiar with Word for Word, what they do is they take a short story or a couple of short stories, and then these stories are read so that each individual phrase, such as he said or she said, is included in the actual performance. And among the writers they've done in the past, they've done Tobias Wolff, but I think Alice Munro is an ideal choice for this particular type of medium. She's a strong visual writer. Often her settings as a Canadian are in small towns in Canada, British Columbia. And the opening story, it's called The Office, is in many ways a riff on that famous Virginia Woolf, A Room of One's Own. So in the story, the wife in the story wants to set up her own office outside her house so that she can establish her own identity as a writer. And the performance is done in a place called Z Space, which I think really lends itself to a very intimate type of setting. You're often only a few feet away from the actors. So this is a great performance for people who like good literature and also enjoy good theatre. And the Word for Word Company, which is now celebrating their 23rd year, bring all this together with these two different stories. The first, The Office, and the second is Dolly.
Information, once again, at zspace.org. And Peter, as a reminder, if you tune in to our website, klw.org, and look at Open Air, just this past episode of Open Air last week, I talked with the folks behind Alice Munro Stories, The Office, and Dolly at zspace. So have a listen to that interview.
Yeah, and Susan Harlow, who was on the show, she is one of the founders of Word for Word. She plays a leading role in both these pieces. The second one, Dolly, is about a couple who are now aging. They're trying to plan their future, and there's a couple of very different surprises happening in their life. As a medium, I really enjoy this. I enjoy it, as I said, as a piece of literature, but I also enjoy it as a piece of drama. And if you think that radio is the theatre of the mind, in many ways, taking a short story, performing it on stage, sticking essentially with the punctuation, he said, pause, and then comes the action, you will really enjoy this. Intense, vibrant, dramatic. I think everything about the art of the short story comes to life in the theatre. And that is the Word for Word performance. It's running at zspace, and it's running until April the 12th. So it's an ideal way for both literature and drama lovers to enjoy something very, very different.
Again, information at zspace.org. I'm glad you caught that, Peter. I hope to do the same in these next couple of weeks before it finishes. So we do have a rather familiar March holiday coming up, and I believe you have something to say about that.
Well, how about a little music to get us going? Do we have, for example, The Wearing of the Green? I ask myself, because that tune, The Wearing of the Green, has indeed a huge historical significance.
Oh, Paddy dear, and did you hear the news that's going round? The shamrock is by law forbid to grow on Irish ground. St. Patrick's Day no more we'll keep, his colours can't be seen. Father hanging men and women for the wearing of the green.
Well, for those historically challenged, Peter, why were people being hung for the wearing of the green?
Well, indeed, this does go back to the end of the 18th century, 1796, and the significance first of green, and I might add that next week from Market Street to Civic Centre, we will be seeing 50 shades of green and a lot more to go with it.
Well, chances are in this town you'll see some scenes acted out from 50 shades of green.
So there we have it. Yeah, real life green and real life action. But it became a symbol of revolt, a symbol against the British occupation of Ireland. And, of course, there are other connections with green. The shamrock itself is indeed green. And, of course, St. Patrick's Day comes as spring goes away. Spring, of course, is the colour of green. And if you think of that title for Ireland, the Emerald Isle, indeed, we're now talking about the Emerald Isle in terms of green. But ironically, I've been to St. Patrick's Day celebrations around the world, and undoubtedly, although it's celebrated in Dublin, America is the real home of where St. Patrick's Day parades got going. In fact, in 1762, it was Irish soldiers who actually were in the English military who took to their parade to New York. And today, New York is the granddaddy of all St. Patrick's Day's parades. The one here in San Francisco is probably the biggest on the West Coast. And I think in many ways, it brings together the fact that over 40 million Americans, according to the current U.S. state census, have got some sense of Irish roots. So if you're into seeing floats, musicians, and above all, entertainment, exhibits, food, and should I mention the word beverage? Yes, indeed, beverage comes in as you see Guinness turn green. A good way to celebrate, perhaps not only in the parade on the walk from Market Street down to Civic Centre, but there are a couple of historic Irish pubs here in the city. The Little Shamrock, for example, in San Francisco's Inner Sunset. was serving drinks in 1893. And when you go in there, you feel you've really gone back to the old country. It's cozy. You'll find antique couches and tables, a dark room, a fireplace. And then if it's foggy, you can sit around and warm your cockles of your Irish heart, having a pint of Guinness in that happy little place, the Little Shamrock. Close to home, Islands 32 on Geary Street and the Blarney Stone, also on Geary Street, are also holding special festivities, and the Plough and Stars on Clement Street, and of course closer to home, the Irish Bank, it's not a bank, it's a bar, on 10 Mark Street. So those are some of the activities which you'll find living and wild here in the city. Now, I often have thoughts about some of the great Irish writers, indeed Irish writers, in this case Irish English, and this, of course, is Oscar Wilde, who said, if only the English could learn how to talk and the Irish learn how to listen, then indeed we'd be in a much better shape. In one of the pubs when I was in Dublin, I did see a sign over the fireplace, those who drink to forget, please pay in advance. And again, that got me thinking about how do you get over that terrible thing, otherwise known as a hangover. And one of the great Irish poets came up with, a good laugh and a long sleep are two of the best cures. Now, if you think talking is the gift of the Irish, on his one visit to Ireland, Sigmund Freud commented, there is one race of people for whom psychoanalysis is of no use whatsoever. So you can put that in your pipe and smoke it, Sigmund Freud. But the way I look at it, on St. Patrick's Day, the inevitable never happens and the unexpected constantly occurs. Have a great St. Paddy's Day and remember the wearing of the green.
Thanks so much, Peter.
Come into the parlor, there's a welcome there for you. And if your name is Timothy or Pat, so long as you come from Ireland, there's a welcome on the mat. If you come from the mountains of Mourne or Killarney's lake so blue, we'll sing you a song and make a fuss. Whoever you are, you're one of us. If you're Irish, this is the place for you. If you're Irish, come into the parlor, there's a welcome there for you. And if your name is Timothy or Pat, so long as you come from Ireland, there's a welcome on the mat. If you come from the mountains of Mourne or Killarney's lake so blue, we'll sing you a song and make a fuss. Whoever you are, you're one of us. If you're Irish, this is the place for you.
Ruby Murray singing If You're Irish. I do wish you a very happy St. Patrick's Day, however you choose to celebrate it, if you choose to celebrate it all at all. I'm David Latulippe. You've been listening to Open Air. A reminder that our shows are archived at kalw.org. Click the Open Air tab and you can hear any of the shows over the past couple of years, really. It's going to be quite an archive as the days progress. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for calendaring our guests here and for some of the technical aspects of the show. And if you've got a show idea that you'd like some local performing arts group featured, by all means, send me an email, david@kalw.org. And a reminder, too, that if you'd like to hear a more extensive interview with Kurt Rohde, the author of Death with Interruptions, you can hear that on our local music player by clicking on the Then and Now tab, even though Sarah's show is now called Revolutions Per Minute, the Then and Now tab at our local music player at kalw.org.